Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. My name is Andrew Main, and I'm not having a birthday today. My co-host, Brian Brushwood. Brian, is today your birthday?
No, I'm not having a birthday today.
Our producer's Bryce Castillo. Bryce, is it your birthday today?
It's not my birthday, no.
Guess that's everybody. Anyhow,
here we go, the birthdays. Another no birthday week here on the Weird Things podcast.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I forgot. Justin Robert Young.
Woo! Yeah, baby! Birthday!
Happy birthday, Justin, man.
Today's about you. It's about your birthday. It's about you. And you know what I got you?
What's that?
I got you a copy of my nomination for the Edgar Award.
It's what I always wanted. It's the Mystery Writers of America, the certificate of nomination for Best Paperback Original, Andrew Main, for his book Blackfall, issued April 16th, 2018. That's amazing. It's on parchment. It's got a Poe up there and everything.
It's got a gold seal. That's amazing.
Now, I'm not going to give you this. I just make a screen cap right now, and that's your present.
That's good. All right, hold on. Wait a minute. Let me just go ahead and take a real quick pic. And there we go. Okay, thank you.
It's what I do. Man, Justin, I have known you for more years than I care to admit to at this point.
A lot of years. Yeah. We're man. I think, are we over the meridian line of that you've known me the longer than I was alive prior to you knowing me?
I always pad that meridian line with conscious thought as long as I've been consciously alive, because you don't have any memories before 3 years old.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a Brian, a Brian fudge.
Yeah.
Well, either way, Andrew's going the hard way. It was, all of my life, there have been less times where I have not known Andrew than when I have known Andrew. And I'll tell you what, it has done me pretty, pretty well. All I do is, every time that it's my birthday, a tradition, Andrew shows me an accolade that he's received over the last year, allows me to take a picture of it, and I just know, and it fuels me for the rest of the year.
And I'm starting my new tradition, showing you what $500 of dollar coins looks like, so that you may get excited.
Oh yeah. By the way, let's get this out of the way up top. If you are in the Austin area this weekend, we are doing a live Night Attack show. So Brian and I will be there at the Kung Fu Saloon, 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 10th. Free show. So come on by and see everything go down. If you've never been to one of our South by Southwest events, it's always just the best way to enjoy your Saturday day.
Is there, Bryce, do we have any idea what the total capacity of Kung Fu Saloon is?
No.
Okay. I'd like to imagine it's only 7 people, so be there. So, make sure to RSVP.
Somewhere between a bushel and a peck and a hug around the neck. But come on out. It'll be a fun time, and everybody will be there. But this isn't about that. This is about weird things. Andrew, what kind of weird things are going on?
Oh, and I just smacked my microphone. That's how excited I am. And just go see the show. Just because it's free doesn't mean it's not good.
Yeah, sure, that was the original tagline, actually. In fact, we're going to update all the posters. Night Attack. Yeah, just because it's free doesn't mean it's not good.
Could be good, even though it's free. And you probably have doubts about that. And I'm sure it's good. In after things, we're going to talk about Justin's one-man show he did last week, too. Yeah. Really excited to hear him give us the breakdown on that. So, gentlemen, it's nice to have heroes, people you look up to intellectually. You're like, this guy, this woman, this person, what they said, you're in an argument. You're like, just read this book and that's my point. And often you say to yourself, like, okay, do I like them because they agree with me? Or do I like them because they inform me and they change the way that I look at things? And I can think of people that, like, Christopher Hitchens is a guy that I always respected. I don't always agree with him,
but I loved the way he made his arguments. I loved his style of handling things. I loved the intensity at which he approached discussions. He made you think. That was what I loved about Hitchens, is you may not at the end of it go, I agree with him, but you go like, man, he really gave another side to something there. And I thought that was very helpful. Somebody
to that point with Hitchens, number one, I would highly recommend any and everybody to read Hitchens. He was one of those, speaking of a thing that Andrew, you know, shared with me in my, you know, formative years, was reading a lot of Hitchens, and I loved every minute of it. If you believe that you fully agree with Christopher Hitchens, you need to read more Christopher Hitchens.
He will find the chasm between the two of you.
He will find there is something that will make you uncomfortable, or you will outright say, I don't agree with that. But his intellectual rigor is something that I think we can all aspire to, is to welcome that level of discourse and his relentless pursuit, and oftentimes changing the way he thought, you know, and evolving, but always having a reason for it. And if you were to ask him, oh, well, why did you go from this to this? He would very, in his Christopher Hitchens kind of way, point out, no, I did not change. You've misunderstood my argument. Here was the through line, and here's where the application has maybe shifted throughout the years. But that is my infinite pick on this show, is read more Christopher Hitchens.
So one of the people that I've always enjoyed reading, and I still do, and I think he has a lot to offer, and particularly in his areas of research and how he applies this, is Steven Pinker. Steven Pinker, The Blank Slate, fantastic, fantastic book about, you know, where does personality, where do our traits come from? You know, the idea of kind of, for me, is sort of resolved to the best of the current state of knowledge, the whole nature versus nurture and the idea that it's nature via nurture, et cetera, kind of argument. And there's so much data in there, and some people still reject some of the premises and the research in there, but I think it's only become more and more bolstered. But I think a lot of people have problems with it because it conflicts with their points of view of how they want to view the world. And here's this really interesting data set that says, no, it's 50% of its genetics, no matter what. This is how we can show this. And you can pick at that and all that, but that seems to be kind of where it comes from. Where the other 50% comes from, it's a little more complex. But anyhow, I've always enjoyed Pinker. Pinker's got a lot of really good takes on stuff. And I think when Pinker's doing his research, it's his strongest point, because he does historical stuff. Are we more violent now, or are we more peaceful? We're more peaceful. The data shows that. People have problems accepting that. Like, what about World War II? And it's like, yes, what about these events which have prominence in your memory that really stand out? That's not the same as a data set which tells you what happens. So Better Angels of Our Nature is his, you know, treatise on that. He's got a new book out, which I've not read, and he's got some essays. And one of the things he talks about is doomsaying, you know, doomsayers and people talking about imminent demise or doom or things like that. And it's more of him expounding. So it's not so much him going to, well, here's what the research does. It's more, hey, here's what I think about this sort of thing. And that's often where you can kind of find where you and maybe your hero disagree, or you feel that, like, I don't think my hero answered this question in the way that I think that would be fair, perhaps. And I'm speaking specifically that Pinker released as part of this an essay dealing with different doomsday scenarios. And one of the things he talks about was AI. You know, is AI a threat? I don't know. I don't know if AI is a threat. And the fact is, nobody knows if it is or if it isn't a threat. And he starts off with an argument talking about the Y2K bug, like, hey, you know, we spent $100 billion and nothing really major happened. There actually were things that did happen to some systems and stuff that weren't. You know, you had, you know, women told that they're high risk for Down syndrome children, whatever, that actually had abortions and stuff because of their ages were miscalculated. But a ton of effort was spent to avert what may have been a problem. Major computer systems were rewritten, financial networks, things like this were done. We don't know. What, you know, he kind of in his essay, he sort of says, some countries didn't do anything and they had no problems either. And it's like, well, there were problems. And that's sort of, it's kind of you had nuclear radiation alarms going off in some places and there were some problems, but we don't know. And I don't know if it's a reason to say, yeah, we didn't need to do anything. You know, was it overhyped? Sure. So then he goes into AI, and I understand, like, I don't really like the idea that, like, of, oh, we're going to create AI and it's going to become like this super Lex Luthor version of ourselves. I think that's sort of you know, I don't think we're necessarily, it's going to have the same agency or same sort of things that we would if we did create a general intelligence AI. But he kind of makes sort of this, it was frustrating to sort of reach his arguments, because he makes statements that are very strawman-esque. He talks about like the first, I'll give you the paragraph. Some threats strike me as the 21st century version of the Y2K bug. This includes the possibility that we will be annihilated by artificial intelligence, whether as direct targets of their will to power or as collateral damage if they're single-mindedly pursuing some goal we give them. The first threat depends on a confusion of intelligence with dominance. Those traits are bundled together in Homo sapiens, but intelligence that is designed rather than having evolved needn't be saddled with ruthless megalomania. The second depends on the premises that, one, humans are so gifted that we can design an omniscient and omnipotent AI, yet so idiotic they would give it control of the universe without testing how it works. And two, the AI would be so brilliant that it could figure out how to transmute elements, rewire brains and other superpowers, yet so imbecilic that it would wreak havoc based on elementary blunders of misunderstanding. So...
I read that shortly after you, I don't think I'm talking out of school to say you were a bit bummed by Pinker's take, that it was so dismissive of the threat of AI. And I read it, and while it didn't make me just shrug and say, oh, well, I guess Steven Pinker said AI is never going to be a problem, so it'll never be a problem, it did lessen some of the anxiety, because if you read is it Nick Bostrom's Superintelligence, mm-hmm. where we talk about the paperclip problem, where if an AI is tasked with making paperclips as fastly or as cheaply as possible, then take it to the logical conclusion. Well, the first thing you need to do is assert political control over all of the planet so that you can eventually have the people build the robots to do the things or whatever. And he does point out the core logical fallacy that on both sides, whether it's humans developing it and being smart enough to make this thing, but not smart enough to go in stages and go slowly, and the AI, being so super intelligent, but not, being able to question its original theses. But that's a matter of how it's hardwired. Here we are in the 21st century as humans with programming that makes us want to do a lot of really bizarre stuff. And we're not fixing that programming. Instead, we are accommodating it and building society around it, whether it's, from the prevalence of free pornography to violent video games or whatever. Like, we're not fixing our core programming. We are reshaping the world to suit it. And I can picture a version of AI doing exactly that as it evolves and never get around to try to fixing itself.
Yeah. Well, before, I think if we want to go more into the AI thing, then we can. But I think part of the initial thought here is there is a kind of writing that is probably among the most popular, which is just about it as a lessened level of, intellectual rigor that would normally go into some of Steven Pinker's best work, and is more about persuading based on emotions. And you see this in, popular culture and politics and stuff like that. Many of our most famous people practice this, and it's more about the flourish than it necessarily is about the data. And I can see where if you are known for bringing the facts and bringing the numbers, and then you're like, okay, well, also, here's my hot take on this. No matter whether or not you are somebody who is that intelligent, I don't think that you're ever immune from the things that we have in our lives that steer our opinions. One of my things that I clown to this day, the professor for the journalism school that I graduated from at our commencement gave a very doom and gloom speech that to these, a crop of the future journalists of America, the biggest story that we would cover in our lifetime was the avian flu. Very big at the time, but he thought, and listen, there is nobody, I am taking nothing away from then Newhouse Chancellor Dean Rubin. He has lived a tremendous life. He has done a lot more in journalism than I ever will, but he was dead wrong there, because that was his hot take. That was his, a future projection based on this data, not this PowerPoint of reasoned, okay, well, if we can say that X event has gotten Y headlines, it was his gut reaction. And that's what I think is the separation point between, you know, the earlier Pinker works and what Andrew is talking about now, if I take your point to be correct.
Well, and let me unpack a couple of things. One is the language of it is frustrating to me because he uses things like, well, we're going to design something omniscient and omnipotent. I'm like, all right, nobody's saying that. That's hypergolic language to try to just, you know, exaggerate. This is how crazy the thing is. Look, you know, and then he uses terms like, you know, if it's so bright, it can figure out how to transmute elements, rewire the brains and other superpowers. I'm like, where is this coming from? Like, is this straw man is not what I recognize when I read concerns for it. There are extreme situations where you think about this where he's like, you know, he's, well, if we decide to build this magical thing, and it's like, that's not.
So this is the problem with imagined future realities. And I got into a bit of back and forth in the comments. We did an episode of Modern Rogue, and the sponsor was NordVPN. And the bulk of the ad was talking about net neutrality. Like, you know, they did it. They ruined net neutrality. That hyperbolic kind of, you know, the sky is falling thing.
Please, can we just... Is that clip handy? Need the first.
It's in my Twitter feed.
10 seconds. Yeah. And we cut it off literally. You will know when we've gotten past the point where, you know, the rest of it can be just NordVPN. I'm sure it's a fantastic company, but just an amazing performance.
Yeah, I tweeted out that I'm told our ad in this week's Modern Rogue is unconventional. Is this not how everyone does their ads? This is the opening of the ad that we did.
They did it. What? The bastards!
What did they do?
Damn you all to hell! They blew it up!
What'd they blow up?
Net neutrality! Jesus Christ! What are we gonna do? Oh,
we can do Nord!
Brian, right. The rest of the ad is the ad, but just an amazing performance. So, your Modern Rogue cohort, Jason Murphy.
So the point was, is somebody took issue to like, hey, why are you acting like NordVPN can fix net neutrality? Because if net neutrality goes awry, then they're just going to block traffic for VPNs. And eventually we got to a place where it's like, yeah, I explain, look, we're all fighting imaginary boogeymen that don't exist yet, right? We don't know what the results of rolling back net neutrality will be. One of the big fears people have is that big companies will be incentivized to shape traffic and to charge things and all that stuff. And again, since, you know, you may say you can imagine a world where a VPN is of no use, but I can easily imagine a world, aka the actual real world right now in China, where it would be of a lot of use. And so I think it's a similar problem in that, if I'm reading you right, Andrew, it sounds like your disappointment with Pinker is that he's not fighting the same imaginary goblin or dragon that Nick Bostrom had postulated.
My argument is he doesn't understand it. I don't think he has a fundamental misunderstanding of the problem. That's my frustration. He is deviating way outside of his expertise and he's weighing in. And I think that is, I think there are areas of expertise he understands. His choice of defining it or whatever is like, no, this isn't what they're saying. And then there are statements he's made. And let me make a broader point here. He's made comments like, well, if Elon Musk, he was on an interview and Pinker says, if Elon Musk is so worried about this, why is he building cars with AI systems and stuff? Why isn't he worried about them like driving across lanes? And it's like this, I don't think he even, and Elon Musk responded to this about, you know, Pinker not differentiating between general intelligence and specific intelligence is this. So I don't think he understands it. That's my thing. I don't think he understands it. I think he's using this. And the other thing that's like, I would make this argument. The people who I'm listening to, I think, are most interesting are saying, hey, not like run for it, but like pay attention. Imagine in 1970, Exxon said, hey, global warming may be a problem. Not right now, but maybe putting a bunch of CO2 in the atmosphere could be a problem. If Exxon was telling you this, you know, maybe you'd be suspicious, but you'd be like, why are they saying this? And when it's coming from people like Elon Musk and others who are deeply involved in artificial intelligence, and I hear other people say, yeah, what we're seeing in the lab scares us. We think the best way forward is to continue to study this and understand it and to be able to develop, you know, systems that could alleviate this problem. That's where I'm thinking. It's one thing when a journalist says, "Hey, we're worried about avian flu." It's another if the CDC and a bunch of people working there are like, "No, this is worrying me." And that's what I'm saying is some of the people saying we need to be mindful and paying attention to this are people deeply involved in AI and continue to be involved in AI, not people on the outside going, "Nah, they don't know what they're talking about."
So please don't take this as me taking Pinker's side, but that was a very, very powerful argument for me 20 years ago about the Y2K bug, because unlike most hysteria where it generates from the uneducated and bubbles up, this one was coming from within with the people most intimately familiar with the problems. And mm-hmm. and I'll admit, I bought a shotgun and I had food. And it was interesting on New Year's Eve 2000 to watch this time zone wave to see what might have been a series of disasters rolling across the globe, eventually striking our town. And it did not come to pass. And I am at risk of making a false equivalency between the two. But what I'm trying to express is that that argument was very, very powerful the first time I heard it. And they were so obviously wrong, the people who were most worried about it.
What do you mean they're wrong? Okay, let's unpack them.
Sorry. The doomsayers. Ooh. The doomsayers were wrong. Doom did not come to pass.
Are you talking about the preppers? Or are you talking about the programmers that rewrote Unix and a bunch of other systems to say, how do we prevent these systems? Because we rewrote tons of financial software and other systems like that to prevent that. That happened. So what we did is we said, if we don't do this thing of trying to fix these software bugs, there could be problems. And tons of software bugs were fixed and were eliminated. And then so I'm saying, like, we don't know what would happen if we said, no, let the code be, because we changed massive amounts of code.
Sure. Well, I'm dialing back to the personal of, should I be terrified of this or not? And I chose to be terrified of it. And that was a personal decision I made. And right. One of the big reasons I chose to be terrified of it was the justification that these are the experts that are closest to it saying you should be terrified of it. And so I'm not talking about whether, what they said was right or wrong.
Because I knew the major financial institutions had addressed that. And then when Y2K can roll, at this point, I'm not worried about it. Maybe dog license and stuff won't get renewed or something like that. But the major, systems like avionics systems and elevators are generally designed by engineers to be robust. I was more worried about a lot of the financial stuff and things like that. And that got the massive rehauling. At that point, I'm like, nah, like this stuff, they're aware of it. They've been trying to fix it. So I wasn't, the night of, I'm like, wasn't worried at that point because I thought that it had been addressed.
Well, and let's also understand that the media landscape of pre Y2K was, months away from Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel laughing about this fad called the internet. And there was a lot of, while certain people, at that point there was a fairly, a robust proto blogosphere and stuff like that of people in the know, kind of sharing things in real time. The average person, this is a story that I think got tech hysteria'd to a larger extent past what the actual issue was and the actual measures that were taken to recover it.
Well, you had measures and you had an industry too of people who would rewrite your code and handle it that were incentivized to tell you, oh yeah, no, this would be bad. This is why we need to go rebind. So there was a lot of things. There are a lot of issues across there, but it's
by the way, you can make the argument that, certainly we are a far more tech literate press now than we were in 1999, but how much more knowledgeable of these specific issues is the assembled tech press, which is by and large covering.
My concern, again, I'm trying to kind of separate from if Bill Gates, or if, the head of American Express or whatever, and 1999, December 20th is like, this is scary, guys. This is scary. I'd be like, oh, geez. And that's how I feel about AI, is there are people who are very no, listen, this is, we're underestimating it. They're not saying it's going to be bad, but the problem is that people are like, man, we've gone through this before. And it's like, I look at it, it's like, it's you know, and I have friends like I'm like Matt Ridley. He doesn't think it's a big deal. And I'm like, I think that we may be thinking like the Neanderthals were, you know, these other people like it's fine, you know. And
well, and I guess that's a good point, because there was no one moment that the Neanderthals, you know, lost out. There just became this slow wave, which to some extent their DNA still lives in most of us today. And I could see AI doing the exact same thing, essentially Borging us and making us part. You know, it's like all we do is experience bliss and joy and do, you know, we receive mission orders and we do them and we all live happy, fulfilling lives. I don't know, like part of me, forgive me for saying, part of me thinks we already are Borg, and the idea of getting more Borgified doesn't exactly terrify me.
Bill Gates on the Y2K bug said that it would not bite as hard as many would suspect. Some countries will have more of a problem than others with the arrival of the year 2000, but for most of us, it will only be a minor inconvenience. Mm-hmm. So chalk one up to old Billy. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, he wasn't panicking, wasn't worried because, and if you use the latest Microsoft software, you'll be fine. Windows NT has a lot of functions.
Yeah, keep in mind, he was making a lot of money on that hysteria too, so it's a good thing that...
That was it. Because there was an industry of people like, oh no, if you don't hire somebody to do this, you're doomed. And that's part of the problem too, though, is like we heard a lot of that, you know, late 90s about network intrusion and stuff. Like, oh, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be this thing, computer viruses and stuff. And people are like, is it really going to spend the time to make those things? And what's really going to be a thing? And like now, it's like, You put a PC on the network, on an internet, you know, without, you know, leave the ports open, it's infected. And that's the thing too. It's a kind of like the Pinker's thing. It's like, we have so many problems right now with dumb systems quickly overtaking other stuff. I can't imagine. And I like the idea of a scenario. We have this harmony, or we become absorbed into some sort of AI thing and still get to do our own, have free agency. My thing is that, you know, we're basically regarded to the same level as fungus. And it's like this, you know, I don't know. I love AI. I'm big into the ideas of this stuff and exploring this, but it's like, I don't know. I just get frustrated when somebody like Pinker or somebody else says stuff. On the also side, sometimes some of the doomsayers who say stuff without knowing what they're talking about.
Yeah. And I think the place where the debate is the most important is in amongst people who are in a position to do something about it, to propose solutions, to rewrite the code and to, you know, I guess that's the thing, is that it feels like it should be an academic debate. And, you know, you and I the three of us are kind of on that fringe border between the academic side and the general populist side. It does feel like it's too early for the debate to be in the general populace. Much like the Y2K thing, I think the hysteria leaked out of academia into the general populace too early, and got a lot of people doing some nuts.
I think it was also a zeitgeist thing, and that's why I made the point about the larger media, is that at the time the internet was this great unknown, and it was the things your kids are doing, and it was just all these very hot button kind of issues. Now all of a sudden, like, oh, all your money might go away. This was the final folly of man's technological advancement. Like, we are Icarus, flown too close to the sun with our modems made of wax.
So if you want to go look at OpenAI, that's one of the initiatives that Elon Musk has helped support. Reid Hoffman, Peter Thiel. You know, these are some very interesting, you know, these are not, you know, Chicken Little type personalities. These are people like all, like, particularly Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, deeply invested in artificial intelligence systems and things like that.
Sure. And keep in mind, you know, they're still working on them. And their thesis is not we shouldn't do any AI, right, or we should stop or put limits. Correct. Their thesis is we should be cautious and careful as we move forward, and that's something I can be down with.
I think we are all to develop safe versions. I think we are all for the careful movement forward, because that would probably be the difference in to bring it back to Pinker's thing, is that there is a, from his point of view, a seemingly blasé, like, whatever, tech is gonna tech, and sometimes you tech it to the left, and sometimes you take it to the right, but it doesn't matter. We're all come out in the end. And these other people on the other side are saying, well, look, we very much hope this isn't going to just obliterate the planet, but we think that this has the potential to be dangerous if we're not careful, and all we're doing is advocating being careful.
If you go to OpenAI, check out their blog and some papers, you can find some stuff they have. They're like the malicious use of artificial intelligence, forecasting, prevention, and mitigation, from University of Cambridge, Oxford, and other institutions where they put together their whole... This is where they sort of think about, like, here's, you know, take a look. And that's kind of what I would love to see Pinker do, is like take apart some of these papers and stuff. Like, tell me, and maybe again, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I want the smartest people I look up to start debating on the grounds of the facts and the research.
I have a prediction on what the first, let's do some wild speculation. I have a prediction of what the first malicious AI is going to be. It's going to be, or one of the big malicious AIs that comes out. It's going to be a bot that goes through all publicly available cameras and identifies with facial recognition tools every single person that walks by, and then picks out and then looks up their Twitter accounts, and then finds some moment of them picking their nose and tweets them and publishes nose picking pictures of everyone or something in that. Like, it'll be a hilarious jape, a lark or so on, but it'll be something like that. Something dumb that everyone rolls their eyes, but also maybe realizes, oh wait, there is such a thing as a malicious AI that does harm because somebody would.
Now, where do you think that lands between being artificial intelligence and a bot?
Well, it's not AGI. It's not artificial general intelligence, but I think that would be the kind of bot that would put on the map the idea that AIs are powerful tools that can be used for good or not so good things.
I mean, the question would be that where does that facial recognition database come in? You know, like, are you scraping from?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be APIs that people can use. I mean, you know, my guess is Amazon AWS will have some version of it available as a plugin. You just drop it in or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that data now, at least, unless you are famous, you know, or on YouTube or like me, all three of us have had so much information out there that is publicly available that people could probably generate recognizable facial recognition for us. And so maybe that's the case. And certainly, you know, there are enough off the rack Chinese, a baby monitor, super cheap Amazon sold cameras that leave their ports open where if you are, you know where to look.
You have the entire Instagram database. You have every publicly posted Twitter thing, every publicly posted Instagram, I think there's no shortage. You only need what? You get 100 pictures of a face, you're pretty good at recognizing it.
You know, we'd have to figure out too, like where does the line between, there's a debate over what do you call artificial intelligence or not too. And, you know, cause you have Stuxnet, which is a great example of something that was, it's 500 lines of code, very, very intelligent, that designed to take apart the Iranian nuclear, reactor program or enrichment program. And then it affects other devices too. And it sort of, it became a problem on a larger scale. And then you have, there are a lot of worms. I mean, it's a worm, and there's a lot of other worms and stuff out there that are kind of smart and very good at adapting. I think I would see the most incentivized place to create something that could go out of control is for mining cryptocurrencies. You know, you already have so many computers being taken. And that was my fear of, when Bitcoin first came out, was my concern is we've now have a new incentive for taking over other computer systems. Not to be a reason it shouldn't exist. I think there's an absolute great future and it's in so many uses for this stuff, but this is the thing that will happen. And now that's happening. And I see that, if you want to create a smarter system to take over other systems for doing that, we're very close to getting a Stuxnet crypto thing that's going to start, we're going to have a secret billionaire somewhere.
But there was one, I want to say there was some HTML code. Oh, as a matter of fact, there's,
CoinHive.
There's a news site that's how they're monetizing it or supplementing their monetization.
CoinHive.
Is that the service?
Yeah, it's a JavaScript. Run a Javascript.
I was trying to remember what journalist was using it.
Yeah, there's a few of them doing it now. You actually had like even movie networks or stuff doing it. It's popping up everywhere now. But yeah, CoinHive. It's a few lines of JavaScript, and you can embed it on any website you want and start creating, in that case, it mines Monero.
Wow.
Well, and what Brian was talking about specific, because I remember this, and I can't find it, because it turns out if you search Google, if you Google Bitcoin news site, you don't exactly find this. But one of the sites in the past couple of weeks or so was doing a beta thing, like, hey, you can disable your ad blocker and we'll get rid of this message, or you can be a subscriber, or you can let us mine Bitcoin.
See, it's site. Yeah, it's signed. Was that, it sounds like with okay. Consent, that would be an okay thing.
Yeah, no. Solana's been trying it. I think CNET, somebody else plays it, tried it. There was, I want to say, I forget like some other, but there like been a lot of them are using it now because it's a very easy thing. I've had it pop up on a couple sites since, but
boy, how weird. So essentially you're paying a subscription fee through your electricity bill, because that's the only thing. Yeah. And through the depleted life of your hardware. But again, that's some amorphous number that you don't really have in your mind for the future anyway.
And also in your mind, something else will go wrong that will render your full box inoperable before you can have some sense of whatever that extra wear and tear on your graphics card.
Yeah, that's the other concern is that Bitcoin mining redlines your hardware as hard as possible for as long as it can, which is why if you're on Solana or something and maybe you don't know the extent of what Bitcoin can do to your hardware,
On a technical level, it's not doing Bitcoin mining. This is doing Monero. And the reason it uses Monero is the algorithms for that aren't as GPUs intensive. Like if you're trying to mine Bitcoin on a regular desktop, it's a futile effort because it's just you're not going to produce it very fast. Where Monero has an algorithm that's supposed to be very desktop friendly. It does, but yes, it does increase the amount of processor speed. And they CoinHive as a company made this, they discourage you, like they're like, please don't do this on mobile without really formally warning people, because you will find your mobile. I played with it. I've actually installed it on a browser and like my own systems just to see like what was going on. It runs hot on mobile.
Wow. Well,
hey, look, there is an easier way that you can give us money, and that is by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. Hey, it's patreon.com/weirdthings, your favorite place where you can kick in a little coin and get some goodies from us, the Weird Things gang. Well, you get email notifications, you get the After Things podcast a little bit early, and probably more than anything, you get to know that this podcast continues to roll on each and every week, bringing you the weird that you deserve. My friends, head on over there, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Man, I want to live on Mars. Not forever, but I'd like to visit there. And one of the things I had thought about is there are things you would bring to Mars and things you would not. And one of the things you would probably not, we probably wouldn't bring cattle. It takes a lot of space, maybe years, a long time from now, but probably the time it's feasible to bring cows to Mars.
It's butter. How am I going to open Mars's first Taco Bell? That's all I wanted to do. I want to open a Taco Bell on Mars.
I don't think we can, because I don't think at that point, everybody will look down on meat eaters and stuff. And so you just want a glass of milk on Mars. You can't do it. Maybe I want a leather jacket. Can't do it. It's impossible. That's the end of the segment. It just can't be done.
wait. I just read an article on a really interesting site called themodernrogue.com. Today's article comes from, let me double check who it's from, Ian Forty, who writes some really, really good stuff. He did a whole article on meat hacking. I had heard of the idea of taking, meat and growing more meat out of from a cow. Was it the legend of the $300,000 hamburger, the $10,000 meatball, or what have you? And there are meat substitutes that use like insect protein. There's some protein bars that the proteins come entirely from crickets and other stuff with mealworms. Apparently, they can make a pretty convincing hamburger with mealworms. And now they even have a hemoglobin, the red stuff when you cut in there. They can artificially manufacture that as well.
Heme.
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 Heme. Got it. Yes. Heme. They can manufacture that as well. But the two that were new to me are, let me get the name of the product. I want to say, is it Perfect Day Milk, I think it's called?
Perfect Day is a company.
Yeah, so. Perfect Day is a company that produces vegan milk without ever having to lay a finger on any udders. Unlike soy milk, almond milk, or any of the vegan substitutes that have existed, the process for creating Perfect Day Milk is kind of like making beer. Yeast has to be fermented. Specifically, they use dairy yeast and sugar to basically do that, do in a lab what a cow does naturally, which I hadn't heard of before. So essentially, it's a real milk, basically.
What is dairy yeast?
I don't know. There's a link to the original article that takes you over to Quartz Media.
I don't quite know. PerfectDayFoods.com is the website where they have some information here.
And then the other one was leather. The idea of manufacturing leather, specifically the article says, given that leather is literally the flesh of an animal, it might be hard to conceive of how to make it. The science is not super complicated. The important part of the skin in leather is collagen. Turns out you can grow collagen as a byproduct of, again, yeast, which, by the way, all this yeast talk makes me think about reading iRobot from Isaac Asimov, where they talked about how proud the city runners were that they were able to convince everyone that there was a bumper crop of strawberries and it was all secretly made of yeast or whatever. But the idea of manufacturing collagen also allows them to get this 3D print leather in custom shapes, which is insane. And as the implications as price falls is that we could free up a ridiculous amount of land for reforestation. We can spend less money, less energy, and have considerably less greenhouse emissions and all this stuff. But I thought that was pretty cool. The fact that there are three main things that we love to get out of cows, and the idea of all three of them being able to be done, manufactured without cattle, pretty cool.
I'm looking up, because the phrase dairy yeast I've never encountered before, and I'm trying to find out what this is, because it's one of these things, because it sounds like a thing. You're like, oh, this is dairy yeast, and I'm looking at what this is, because yeast of dairy origins is probiotics. So I guess these are maybe yeast that they find in cows.
Yeah, basically they're taking the natural culture from in cows and figuring out what they do and trying to simulate all that again. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand. But interesting. I mean, I'm all for this, because I don't know what the difference between, like, you know, cow milk yeast and is yeast actually a part of the process of the milk production? Because, I mean, as far as mammals, it just sort of,
well, like for
mammals, it's,
well, for example, you know, rice milk and soy milk and almond milk, those are in no way the same being or nowhere, no way close to being the same. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't put it that way. That is a approximation from a totally different branch of life. But the idea that an artificial milk would be created with a lot of the same character actors as the actual beast makes me feel like it'll be a closer analog.
Yeah, and I just wonder if it just sounds like marketing speak. To me, I just wonder if it's really marketing speak, because – and I agree. I think we theoretically could do it at the point where we make the cells and stuff to do this sort of thing. I wondered this to me. I'm like, is this just more dairy yeast? Oh, okay, sounds good. I'm like, well, wait, what's dairy yeast?
Yeah, my guess is if you're in marketing for Perfect Day, my guess is you talk to the eggheads, and the eggheads are like, yeah, we use C-235B, a strain that was originally found in so-and-so. And you're like, yeah, that's not going to sell. Yeah, is it okay if we take this whole class and call it dairy yeast? That's a word. And then
maybe there's more to it. I don't know. Yeah, I'm curious.
Their website says they source their dairy yeast from the USDA. I don't know if that helps anything.
Is that on Prime?
Very interesting. Yeah, I'm excited about this thing, though. I think that the as you're able to get to the source of what you need, you know, there's a lot of a cow you don't really need, you know, to get to the good tasty parts. So I think that's an exciting development. I think we're going to see more of it. And there's a point at which it becomes cheaper than meat, becomes cheaper than milk, and that's the goal. When that becomes cheaper, We've already reached this point in like the U.S. peak farmland. We use less farmland now than we did, you know, 30, 40 years ago, even though there are more people because we're more efficient at doing this. I mean, that's the trend. Like the less farmland you have to use, the easier it is to, you know, cheaper it is, whatever, et cetera. And now we have, you know, the symptoms of poverty, if we just talked about before, is obesity, where it used to not be.
Right. We also, just as we were going live, I got live over Twitter from Ken from Chicago, a conspiracy theory.
Oh my God. Conspiracy, everybody.
Ken from Chicago points out, it's just really weird that the three of us here on Weird Things started praising Elon Musk about 8 years ago, and now he's A, launching rockets near Justin's Florida home, B, boring tunnels near Andrew's California home, and C, building a facility a scant 5 hours from my home.
Only 5 hours.
Well, hey man, I'll tell you what, that's a shorter trip to watch a rocket launch than go to Canaveral. I mean, that's,
yeah. 5 hours in Texas is like 45 minutes away anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boca Chica. So we'll talk a moment about that. Boca Chica is where they're, it's fun to say, number one, that is where SpaceX is building their own launch facility. And it's this place in the kind of, you know, Bryce will pull up a map and show you where this is. It is, they have McGregor where they test, like they have the, they tested the Grasshopper, all that. Boca Chica is this nice little sort of area that allows them to launch things over water because that's always kind of a good idea to do that. It's very, very similar in many ways to like Canaveral is. It's right near the Mexican border. So, you know, they can wave and see this as it goes up. And they're building a big facility there. And they talk about the next generation rocket, which SpaceX, which we've talked about this now, in a month or two, they're going to launch Block 5. That's the Falcon 9 Block 5 variation, which Elon Musk says that's sort of the last major design change to the Falcon 9 rocket system. After that, they're going to lock the design unless they need to make some improvements, and all the engineering is going to be going towards building the BFR, the big
friendly
Falcon
rocket
spaceship, which they're looking at probably testing this from this part, the upper stage section. They're going to probably start testing this from Boca Chica. And once that, the people who worked on the launch pad in Canaveral are now supposed to be going to Boca Chica to work on a launch pad there. And the goal is, they're hoping, like Elon even said, maybe end of this year, which I don't think will happen, you know, but Elon time, they want to start testing the first systems for the BFR rocket, the upper stage, to be able to start doing hops with this, then longer hops, then eventually work on the booster and start to test that, et cetera.
This is huge because it looks like you'll be able to be at South Padre Island, which is a popular spring break destination here in Texas. And in fact, my family's vacationed there several times. And the idea of being able to do that and also just catch a rocket launch would be huge.
And not just a rocket launch, right? This is going to be a commercial spaceport. This is going to be something that will be launching a lot of rockets at, you know, throughout the day and possibly evening, right?
Yeah, the goal is just do, you know, they're planning on doing 30 launches this year. They have a launch this week would be the 50th Falcon 9 launch. And you look at how many of those launches happened in those last couple years, like I think they did something like 20 last year. So, you know, they're going to try 30, and it's like, yeah, you're going to go see a launch and be like, oh, what time, you know, when can I see a launch? I don't know, maybe 2 p.m., 8 p.m., you know, instead
which
of
which one?
Planet at 8. They're going to build, and this thing, like this is like 150 feet long, 30 feet across. I mean, now this little one is not actually that big. I'm not a giant. I didn't mean to confuse anybody.
Andrew has a prop.
I'm holding up a prop of the BFR, which I'll explain how I made this, you know, at the when we do our picks. But anyhow, they're going to start building into this year a Mars rocket. You know, this is a rocket to go to Mars. This is a year.
Fantastic.
They're going to start building this. And I'm playing with plastic models. one more news item.
Yeah, I think we got time.
Sure. Yeah.
Let me do a cool tech thing. I keep meaning to do this. I'll save the other ones for next week. You guys see this little cool demo of the Firefly lights?
No.
Well, you know, we always talk about like, hey, you know, what'd be really cool would be like, you know, holograms that float in midair. And I know our friend Jaime has worked on some cool tech, you know, in that area. There's some other cool stuff using, you know, lasers in balancing the moisture or, you know, just making actual air molecules excite. Let me check out the researchers who did this. Basically, what these people working on with the Firefly lights, they're tiny, tiny little chips that glow, and they're able to suspend them using sound waves effectively and make things float. Like, imagine them as little pixels in the air with, you know, with a lot of light control.
Wow.
There's a New York Times article on this too, where you can see they're making like the letter R. So they have this thing using ultrasound to control them. And what they've been able to do is figure out how to do ultrasound to much more precise control of these things. So these particles, they weigh like 16 milligrams, you know, 0.14 of an inch across. They can glow with different patterns to it. So scientists invent floating firefly light that rides on ultrasound waves. The idea for this, though, is that you start talking about making these, you know, holograms, like really cool holograms that free float in front of you. You don't need to wear glasses. They're not looking into some chamber that spins things around. We're in the early infancy stage of this. There's a lot of things that we need to do to be able to control this. Oh, cool. We got a video here. We're watching this and we're looking at a coil, and inside is this tiny little thing that looks like a sequin, and it's hovering around. They actually show an example of it floating over a page of text and illuminating the text.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah, that's crazy. So if you've ever seen the ultrasound demonstrations, oftentimes you'll see them with basically little particles of styrofoam or something where they'll float up on there. So my guess is that the significant thing is that they have a level of precision and control, but also a light enough diode that obviously you can't levitate a human with ultrasound. Yet, but you can, you know, these little lights. That's amazing.
So does this only work around the coils that we're seeing here, Andrew?
What was the question?
These only work in around these electric coils.
I think the coil may be providing power to that. I don't know.
Okay.
I think that there is a ultrasound projector, as Brian says. That's been one of the innovations. Is the major innovation, I think, was the precision of which you can do this now. Because you see another one where they show like the letter R, which they're able to create, you know, discrete areas in which they can do that. And if you can, I presume that the coil is actually what's giving them the illumination. But, you know, you put, if it's a matter of just finely levitating particles, whatever, there's scotch light, there's a lot of little things you could do. Of course, prediction 4 years from now, we're going to hear about like, hey, nano holograms. Are we worried about inhaling them? Is there an environmental threat?
Yeah.
And maybe there will be, you know, my poo, it glows.
Oh, no.
Could happen. So, gentlemen.
Oh man, is it time? Is it time for our weekly visit to Dirty Quest?
Previously on
Johnny Quest! I look right in the officer's face and I say, I'm sorry, officer. He didn't know we couldn't do that.
All right. We're giving you a warning. Here we have Mustache Man and the other one here to weigh in.
We're invoking the rarely remembered wrestling rule of trial by quiz.
So here we are.
By the way, unmentioned in that recap was that apparently our good clone Bryce, which we were attempting to Dave bad real Bryce, has instead preemptively taken matters into his own hands, killed bad real Bryce, and has now installed himself. He Daved himself. He Daved himself up.
Also
and,
I don't know. I think he more Brutus'd himself than Daved. I don't know that he was very subtle.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever the Prince and the Pauper, where he killed the other one, but instead.
Yeah.
Well, now also I just have in my notes that the guys took their willies out, so I think. Also, you're
what?
I don't. Sometimes I try to leave myself notes so I can remember what happened last week.
I'm glad it's not just me.
And I've got, they get weighed in, they kill a dude, and take their D words out. So you may have to.
We also admitted that we're definitely Brian and Justin, not Mr. Mustache and the other one.
Oh, yeah.
We tried to do Night Attack bits.
Yeah.
So now here you are. You've got a bunch of fans like, we want to fight. Filled, you know, what did we call it? Bricer's Palace in Bryce, Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Were we at the weigh-in, though? Was this still the weigh-in?
Well, we were going to do the we were at the weigh-in, and then it kind of really broke down because Bryce was going to come fight, and then Bryce did come and fight, but then we found out that was clone Bryce, and that clone Bryce had killed real Bryce.
So now he's at the weigh-in. He just destroyed. That was in the middle of the weigh-in. This is where this happened, right? He stepped in to do the weigh-in. We're not even in the whole, you know, arena hall where we're going to see the fight. By the way,
yeah.
Okay. Now what happens is Bryce, after ripping apart who we thought was clone Bryce, but turns out was clone Bryce, but now real Bryce is clone Bryce.
Yeah, he stepped in. He usurped the throne.
Oh, right. I gave you a wink.
Wink. Yeah, wink. Exactly.
Yeah, gave you a wink, did a mustache, okay, to imply this.
Yeah.
Okay. So he strides on stage next to you guys, okay? And now this is really weird. Okay. This is, I want to gross you out, but people are actually like eating the body of clone Bryce.
What they think is clone Bryce, but it's actually real Bryce. Oh my God. Yeah. What a sacrilege. Yeah. That's so pretty gross. Okay. So at this point we gotta keep up the show, right?
Yeah.
So I say, oh, you Bryce, you're gonna go down. I'm going to beat you up real good. And I just sort of, I give an overly exaggerated wink.
Let's say it too.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm going to punch you right to the moon.
Yeah. I'm going to moon punch you too. I'm going to give you the sun and the stars in my fist into thars.
That's from a poet from before your time, people. I say to the crowd.
Yeah, and then I just mean mug.
Bryce goes up to you guys. He does the chest to chest sort of, you know, Rocky versus Ivan Drago sort of thing, right? But he's tall. He's way taller than both of you, and he's got clone Bryce blood all over him, and it gets all over you guys. By the way,
all right. So I'm like, I'm like chesting up to Bryce, and I'm like, yo, you want to go? You want to go? All right, we'll just leave after this. We'll just go and leave. If you want to go, then we can just go. We'll just go
Bryce
right now.
Bryce is like, could you whisper louder so I can hear? He's like, you gotta whisper loud enough for the game master to hear.
Yeah, I need it. Like, so we're gonna leave. We'll say we're gonna do the thing, but then we can just leave, right? That's all we can do.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Real style, Thars.
Yeah, and I said, you know what? I say the stakes aren't high enough. If you have what it takes, since you're the great ruler of this town, I say you show up in your baddest ass rocket ship, and make sure it's fully equipped. And if we win, we'll steal it from you. But if you win, you could torture us to death. And I was like, but then I lean over to both of you guys, and I'm like, but don't worry, because it's going to be a rigged fight. We're just going to, he'll show up with it, and then we'll fly away in his rocket ship.
Yeah. That's we're going to get you, and we're going to, you will never torture us.
Okay. Then I go, well, I'm gonna scalp you out there in the ring. I'm just gonna.
A guy comes running in and goes, "I'm his writer. I'm supposed to create his taunts. I'm sorry, I'm late."
Jerry, I needed you about 30 seconds ago.
And then he just crushes Jerry's head, like with his robot arm, just like a great
coming.
time.
You won't fail me a second time. See, I needed Jerry again. But.
Yeah. Could have written you something. I'm doing it all on Upwork from here on out. You guys are all garbage.
You're like, that's what I get for using Fiverr for my one-liners.
and then I pull the guy's clothes. Hey, I guess I need to know the code for the bomb. I need the bomb code. I need the code for the bomb. The bomb's here. I just need the code for the bomb. I just need that code. If you can just give me the code.
One second. I need to take a whisper break from this whisper break. Okay. Justin. Is there any reason good clone Bryce would legitimately need these codes?
You guys have to make like a quip, otherwise this doesn't read to the audience. Like the staging, we're just huddling right now.
Okay, we're walking away from you so I can have a sidebar with you. Justin.
Hey, you stay over there. Bryce.
What?
Stay over there. We're walking away. Okay?
You don't come with us everywhere. Plus, we're supposed to be enemies right now. Okay?
We're building it up.
Just play to the audience. Start posing. Pose for the audience.
Like the fallout shelter. You're not invited.
Okay. Right. Don't remind him of that, Game Master. I swat at the heavens like it's a net. I'm like, go away. Don't remind him. Hey, Justin, is there any legitimate reason that Bryce would need the codes for the nuke?
I mean, if we're not going to leave it with him, if we're going to take off in this rocket.
I mean, I figure we'd take the nuke with us, right? Either that or we just torch the whole place behind us. Oh, audio listeners are missing some amazing posing from good price clothes.
The Exodus theme, we can listen. I mean,
if we're legitimately
behind him.
if we're in this rocket, then whatever. We can just leave the nuke. Who cares?
Okay. All right. We're coming back. All right.
You're back.
That's right.
For a second helping of verbal applesauce. Open wide.
That's weird. That got weird. It started bad and then it got weird.
That's right, buddy. We your verbal applesauce is...
No, your mouth is the hangar and our fist is the airplane. And here it comes tomorrow when we fight to the death.
Good plan.
Also, we're so confident that we're going to win, I'll give you the password to our Gmail account.
And there's weird stuff in there. Conversations with ex-girlfriends, old order histories. Literally nothing's off limits when you have access to our Gmail account.
No idea how many TripIt updates and upgrades there are in there.
It's... Alpha, Durango, Bravo, Beta, Flingadoo, 12,
exclamation point, 69, YOLO, okay,
that's the password, and I turn to the audience, and I hold a finger, I'm like, but don't you guys try it.
Well, they don't
people
know the
put down their well, yeah. pens and stuff as they're about to write it and put it down.
And then I give a big old fat wink to Bryce just to make sure he got the and then I lean over and I whisper, actually, that's not our Gmail password. I gave you
the thing that we talked about just like a second ago. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if by thing you mean the codes to the nuclear bomb, yes, it's the codes. I just want to be totally clear.
Okay.
Also, each word is capitalized, so the beginning of each word is capitalized.
Wait, that wasn't the NATO phonetic alphabet? That was the whole freaking thing?
No, yeah, sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, all right, it's fine.
We'll play the tape back.
Here, do you have a pen? If you have a pen, I'll just write it down for you. Okay, hold on.
You can't write.
Hey, I'm going to draw a picture of your mom's boobs.
That's right. Okay, that's right.
You lily-livered sons of guns.
No, he knows them really well because he has seen them with his eyes.
I hold up the incredibly long password, hoping that from a distance it looks like just a straight line. I'm like, see how flat it is? Your mom is very flat-chested.
Oh, that's something that we know.
and then I say, here, why don't you hang on to this?
Yeah, give me this. I'm going to remember this for my vengeance.
why don't you think about that when you're nursing?
I'm the promoter here, Marty McPromoter.
Marty, what are you doing here?
I got to tell the audience here, it is really tense on stage. There's a lot of personal animosity going on here. A lot.
You're done right. In fact, I've had it up. I'm out. And then I give double middle fingers and start marching out. And then I whisper to Justin, come on. Hey, good clone, Bryce. Who's pretending to be real, Bryce? We'll catch up with you later.
Gotcha. Okay. I say, all right, I'm leaving. And then I do a series of backflips off the stage.
Oh, man. In your mech armor? That's incredible.
It's really impressive.
You'd think you'd have to roll something for that, but no.
He just landed on the South Korean media.
And then I rev my chainsaw hand 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And you guys, like, just walk out?
Yep. Back to the bus.
Right. So Bryce is on stage. He's like, huh. Well, that was abrupt. They didn't even get to see who my tag team partner is.
I immediately come walking in and comically hold my chainsaw hand up to my ear and saying, what? Did you say tag team partner?
He's like, I start
front flipping my way onto the stage.
He's like, don't worry. We'll save it for tonight. And he winks at you guys. Wink.
All right. I rev my chainsaw hand. I'm like, no tricks. I don't like no tricky business. Actually, this whole thing is a trick, so it's kind of ironic that I said that. It's pretty funny. Like, no tricks.
Tricks are for kids. And then I backflip.
So you guys leave. You leave Bryce on stage. He's like, okay. Just cue the pyrotechnics anyways. And there's a bunch of pyro and boom, 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 explosion. Next thing you know, Bryce is gone.
Great. So, We head back to the bus. I crack open a caffeine-free Diet Coke with my good left hand, and I say, that went well. That went well.
You get a knock on the door. Hey, guys, fight starts in 45 minutes.
Whew. I guess we got to go put on this show, right, Justin?
Well, you know, it's going to be nice knowing all you weirdos, these bizarre children that Brian collected. The weird seamster who put together all these costumes.
While Justin's saying that, I'm signing autographs, but I'm signing both of our names so as not to disturb him. I signed Brian and Justin.
Anyway, we're going to get here on this rocket, and we're going to blast on off to California where we can finally complete the mission that has taken so long. Seemingly driving from Texas to California would probably take... Oh, you know, just a couple of hours, maybe a day or two, but instead it's been goddamn near a year of us making very incremental weekly progress in a bizarre family circus-like pattern.
Peter Plotman here. I have a question here. From the story structure times.
Yeah.
What's this I hear about a rocket ship?
I mean, we just assume anyone of Bryce's stature probably has some kind of awesome rocket. Failing that, any kind of rad vehicle that only somebody very powerful and wealthy would have available.
No, we just bet. We just bet on this match. Okay.
Cool. Just wondering. Okay. Yeah. And he would keep this rocket ship. In the Luxor, maybe turn the pyramid into a launch.
I mean, that seems
that
sounds like a very Bryce thing.
Cool.
In fact, I wonder what Bryce, the actual Bryce, definitely not some good clone Bryce pretending to Bryce. I wonder what he's doing right now.
We're going to have to wonder. Meanwhile, you guys are getting ready for your fight, right?
Okay. You were trying
to flash sideways.
I wanted to see how you were going to talk your way into getting a rocket ship. I wanted you to fluster about.
This is not my story.
All right.
Or we'll get to his story again. But here's what I want you all to notice is you're getting ready. You're lifting up your shirts that you were wearing that you stole from the merchandise mart. And you're like trying to avoid the blood that got on you from clone from Bryce, clone, real Bryce, right?
Yeah, from actual Bryce.
And then, man, smells like syrup.
Hey, wait a minute.
And then you lick it.
Justin, let me lick this blood. Please don't judge me.
Yeah, all right, go ahead. Give it a good lickaroo. Give it a nice little, yeah, get all the Karo taste buds syrup on your tongue.
This is Karo syrup. I don't think actual Bryce got killed at all. I don't think anybody died.
So wait, but that would mean good clone Bryce would be still in our little area that we kept him during the trip. I open up the gate where we were keeping good clone Bryce.
It's mustache.
He's bound and gagged.
Oh no, good clone Bryce.
I was like, see, I have a story to tell you. Next week.
Oh, no, we gave him the codes. Real Bryce has the codes.
Why would you do that? There's no show. We didn't need to do it.
Next week.
Gosh darn it.
We got a real problem.
Another thing goes against us. I don't think we'll ever get to California.
So, there we go.
I can't believe it. Hey, it was going so well. It was going so well.
Journey quest, guys, not end destination.
Yeah. All right. Who's got some picks? I got two picks. I'll give you guys a choice. Do you want the Netflix pick or you want the podcast pick?
Netflix.
Watched Everything Sucks, the teen drama centered in the late 90s. And there's a fair amount of, like, TV writing that kind of guides some of the plot. And I don't know if it ever really gels as, like, a commentary on the time period that it's in. But the interactions with the characters, I think, are really well done. And there is some really, really good acting work, I think, done by the cast that by and large looks like younger kids, except for one chick who looks like she's, you know, 25. But other than that, it's
Gabriella Carteris of the show.
So what was that?
She was Beverly Hills 90210. She was like in her mid 20s when she got cast on that show.
Yeah. Well, let's just say there's like a scene where they're all
90s
like
reference. Sorry. About a 90s show.
There's a scene where they're all at like the pool area, like they're on like this field trip, and one of these people doesn't look like they're supposed to be an awkward teen in a bathing suit with their other people. They look more comfortable in it. But yeah, no, it's by and large a fun show. But ultimately, I guess here was the one thing that kind of got in my craw a little bit. It would have almost been a better modern day teen drama, like right down to one convention. Can I spoil a little thing for you?
Sure, please.
Sure.
So there's a broken home situation. And one of the characters finds a crate of VHS tapes that the parent that left created like a vlog. And it almost kind of seems like there was a script where, you know, in a modern era that somebody found their absentee parent's YouTube account, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are now watching these old vlog videos. But instead, because it's in the 90s, it's just like, oh, here's an old crate of tapes that was just sitting around. Nobody knows what these tapes are for. And so that plays a pivotal role. But it's like, I don't know. I don't ever remember the old crate of tapes.
Yeah, that was not a thing, basically, is no, what you're saying. Like don't
I remember.
They're trying to make crate of tapes a thing.
Yeah, in that age, I wasn't like, the mysterious crate of tapes that's sequentially numbered so I can watch them in order. Also, it's not like just one tape where they just keep turning on the button.
Oh, each one is a tape?
Yeah,
you pay $7 for a 4-hour tape so you could use the first 2 minutes and 48 seconds and then just throw it on the shelf?
Yeah, so I don't know. It doesn't ultimately affect anything because I don't know if there's a lot beyond like Alanis Morissette. What's up with her? You remember Oasis? Like that that they're trying to make a lot of commentary on the 90s. But, you know, that was just one of those things where like I almost wondered whether or not this was like a retrofit modern script that they're just like, I don't know. Let's just, you know what Stranger Thing did for the 80s? Let's do that for a comedy, but with the 90s.
Given the way things work from like I guess we'll call it Netflix networks or whatever, that they could be like, you know, we need a 90s thing, and now a couple of writers they're like, yeah, we got a 90s thing.
Yeah,
you know, cross, you know, right, you know, right here, right now, you know, some because Jesus I think Jones,
the central,
boom,
the
done.
Central conceit of the show that everything kind of builds up to is could be a very modern thing, like the central conflicts, like. So I don't know. But anyway, it's good. Watch it.
Cool. Hey, I'm reading the book The Tower and the Square by Neil Ferguson. Is it Ferguson? I'll get the answer here shortly. But it's about networks and hierarchies. And it is a big journey that he takes, applying the question of like what's a network and what's a hierarchy, beginning with, you know, ancient history and then going through you know, World War II. And now I'm up to the part about halfway through the book where he's talking about like, you know, the mafia. Part of the mafia's strength is that they're more of a network than a hierarchy. They were a confederated group of independent criminals that agreed on a few tenets that linked them as a network, which made it very, very difficult to pierce. he talks about the strengths of hierarchies versus the strengths of networks and vice versa. And it's sweeping and huge and super dense. It's a big long book, but I'm glad I'm listening to it. I wouldn't go so far as to say like I'm enjoying it. It's not an easy read. I'm not having a really great time, but I'm very happy for this constant ongoing meditation about looking at the world through a different perspective. I think it's really enlightened me. So if you want to be enlightened like me, then read the book.
The Square and the Tower.
The Square and the Tower.
The
Sorry.
Square and the Tower.
I just want to say the Tower and the Square. The metaphor being the town square is where, you know, the crowds go as a network, and the tower is where the hierarchy lives.
Kind of like the modern take on the cathedral and the bazaar.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
That one of the earlier metaphors for internets and stuff. Sounds very interesting. Yeah. I look forward to you finishing this book and then just describing it to me that way.
You know, bringing it up for the next 2 years.
The Brian notes on it. I have a pick. It's more of, I got this thing. It's really cool. Oh my God. I'm in love with this thing. You know, I play around 3D printing and, I've been involved. I've got a project going on, which I'll be able to talk more about at some point. And I've needed to do some more 3D printing. And I've been frustrated sort of about the state of the art with 3D printers, because I think that like a 3D printer you buy today hasn't really changed much in almost a decade of 3D printers. You know, they're really like it's the same speed, same stuff. There's been some incremental improvements there, but overall, like it's still there's not been I have a whole theory on why that is. But anyhow, it's frustrating. You haven't seen an evolution in 3D printers like you should have. But I needed to get one. I needed to get a new one. I went through one that didn't do the ABS plastic I wanted, and then I came aware of another printer and bought it, and it's expensive. This is like a $4,000 3D printer, but OMG. I got myself the Raze 3D N+ printer.
What?
1 foot by 1 foot by 2 foot print area.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's big.
It's huge. You know, if I think if Bryce pulls this thing up, you can see this is the thing.
The N2 Plus FFF 3D printer from Raze 3D.
Yeah, and I got the one, the double extruder. And if you look at like it's some of the if you look at some videos of this, it's big. This thing is so big, it weighs 200 pounds. It's got to be on its own, you know, wheels that you you don't put on a table. So this thing is ginormous and it's really awesome. I control it from my computer here. It connects over Wi-Fi. Really, really, really sexy printer. Really, really capable so far. I haven't done anything super huge yet, but yeah. You know, the price of the lower end 3D printers, the prices are you can get a good, you know, for $300 or $400, you can get a 3D printer that's, you know, totally usable. I just wanted something that had a much larger print area and was sort of just print and forget. I can do a whole queue and tell it what to print. So
that's amazing. That's awesome.
It's kind of awesome. It's kind of just you know, so.
Congrats.
So far, so good. I'm a few days into using this thing, and I'm in love. So, Bryce, any picks?
I do have a pick. I want to show you a little demo of this, because I found this last night, and I thought it was super cool. So it's a phone app called Mubert, M-U-B-E-R-T. And I'm going to open it up. I'm going to turn my phone. I got my home phone hooked up here. And so it gives you three little buttons here. They say study, work, and create. And so I'm going to hit create. And it's going to take a second. And then it starts to play music.
So is this procedurally generated music based on?
It is.
Wow.
And so it'll create, you'll be able to hear it click between different loops and different stems.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that I don't know enough about the technology to know whether it's like pre-rendered clips that are just being layered together, or if there's actual like virtual instruments going on and playing notes together with each other rather than pre-built things. But I was using this last night to do a little bit of a writing thing. And it was cool to just have, you know, people like who get into like coding music. Right?
Yeah,
they want something that,
that doesn't occupy brain space and get you singing along. Like there's things I can't write if there's music that I know the lyrics to, because it short circuits the language parts of my brain. Yeah.
Here, I'm gonna turn on study, because it's they each kind of have a different sound, a little bit like the create one is kind of always very high tempo and a little like kind of electronic,
a little staccato.
Yeah, with the study is a little more ethereal, a little wider. It's a cool thing, and the nice thing is it'll play in the background, so you can go and do other stuff on your phone.
Oh, right on.
While it's playing, and it's free. There's no in-app purchases. It's just.
And it's called Mubert?
Mubert. Yeah,
M-U-B-E-R-T.
They have a website, and I think you can do something very similar on their website. They're a Russian development team who...
Russians?
Yeah. Who I think are starting to look at business-to-business applications of this technology. But it's really neat, and I would like to know more about it and know how intentional it all is, right? Like I know they're working with a lot of musicians as far as I can tell, and they're looking to open up some sort of system to take in musical data or something like that. But I'd like to know how much of it is tailored to like, okay, we know studying you want to do this and this, or if it's just like this is kind of what we feel.
Yeah.
But it's a free app.
This is interesting. I wonder what the licensing rights are on procedurally generated music. Like if you just took an element of it and used it as a bed for your podcast introduction or whatever, would you get in trouble?
Yeah, I mean that's a really good question. Because who's to say, like, if it's completely procedurally generated, who's to say it was procedurally generated if you don't admit it?
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think it, that's kind of a, I don't know the answers to that, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
Have you, I think we talked about it before. You ever seen the Buddha machine?
Is that the thing that made procedurally generated like, graphics?
No, this one does. It's another procedurally generated music thing. It's very kind of spooky and cool. I have one, and it's just neat thing. You just sort of in, you know, I've heard like, oh, it's so pop. I don't know how popular it really was versus what I've heard about it. But I mean, it's one of these things that it's just a very cool, like almost like, yeah.
You ever listen to a little bit of it now? And so this just looks like a little speaker box that I guess you just turn on. Does it even have settings?
I don't think so. I think it's just off or on.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my pick. Mubert.
Cool. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.